Okay, good. We'll get started. And this is our third call. We've had pretty busy schedule the last week or two. We had our second call where we talked about critical issues just before the all-grantee meeting. And then last week, we had the all-grantee meeting from Tuesday through Thursday. And then we're going to have this meeting right after that, and we're doing a kind of a summary of the all-grantee meeting to tell you what we talked about and some of the high points and what we learned at the all-grantee meeting, and we'll get started from there. We usually start these calls with news from Washington and from HMTRI. So, Heather, any news from Washington?
Really no new news from Washington, but they did want to pass around a thank you for everyone who came out to the all-grantee meeting and contributed their thoughts and time. They really appreciated it and mentioned how great it was to see everybody and hear all the different stories and successes and different things that have been going on in the last year with all the various grantees.
Great. Interesting, and I'll get to it in a second. The people from OBLR, and I'll talk about that, they talked about what the plans are for the future of environmental workforce and job development program. And it was kind of interesting. It was what we had expected, but a little bit different. What they're going to be doing, and anyone who has a grant currently can reapply. There used to be a restriction that if you applied last year and you received a grant, you couldn't reapply. If you didn't receive a grant, then you could reapply. What they're going to do this year, it's a little different. It had to do with the budgeting and the budget inside EPA. What they've done for the last 20 years is they've traditionally went out for an RFP in sometimes October, sometimes November, and then unfortunately you would be working on your grant. You have 90 days to respond to write your grant, so you would have to be working over the holiday between Thanksgiving and Christmas, which is shortened, and then usually right after we come back the grants would be due. So it was pretty rough for people that was trying to write a comprehensive grant proposal. This year they're changing a little bit. What they're going to do is they're going to delay the issuance of the request for proposals probably till about February. It might slip till March, but Rachel said it could be February, could be March. And the reason they're doing that is they're going to take their time, and they're going to, in EPA budgeting terms, they're going to skip a fiscal year. In other words, normally what you would do is you would go out on the RFP in November. They would have to have it. You'd have to submit it by January or February. They would take the spring to evaluate it. They would be then doing the awardals in the summer. People would go to the all-grantee meeting, and then they would get started in October before the end of the fiscal year. So they would get their actual money from the government in September. The fiscal year in federal government goes from September 31st, from October 1st to September 31st. So they would have to get the money out the door at EPA before September 31st. Well, because of budgeting, they decided to try something different, and they're switching it around. They decided they're going to award grants every 2 years. And by doing that, they're going to accomplish a couple of things. One, it'll lighten the load a little bit on the evaluators and on the grants people from every year to every 2 years. But more importantly, what they're going to do is they're going to go out on the RFP in probably February, could slip to March. Then you would have 90 days to respond. So you would be getting your grants in the spring, early summer, June or so, and then they would have time to evaluate them and award them. And then instead of getting the money out the door before September 31st, they would get the money out the door after October 1st. So in other words, the money would come out of not fiscal 19, but federal fiscal 20. And by doing this, they're going to accomplish a couple of things. One, they'll go every 2 years for grants, and they'll probably be able to award more grants instead of 15 or 17, it might be 20 plus grants. So there'll be more grants, and they'll be awarded every other year, so every 2 years. There'll still be 3-year grants, and there won't be any requirements. You could apply for the grant anytime. If you get an award, then you could go out for a new award the next time they send out the RFP. So we're going to keep everyone informed as this goes on, and it's pretty much been settled that this is the way they're going to do it. So what that means to people who are interested in applying, if you've never applied for a grant or if you've replied and not been accepted, the big key date is to get all the prep done through this fall and into the winter, and then get your advisory boards and all of the things we're going to be talking about in the PLCs. And then when the grant RFP comes out in February, then it'll be time to write your proposal, get it in, and then you'll be able to get your money, basically the allowance to spend, about October into the fall of the next year. So that will, the fall of 19. So that will delay the old way of doing things by about 3 months from what we've traditionally done. But it'll give you a little bit of advantage in that, one, there'll be more grants available to be funded, and it'll allow people to, every time there's a grant offering, they can apply to it. So that's going to be the new schedule. Any questions? It's a little confusing when you're talking about calendar years and fiscal years, but any questions about how that might work from anyone? The thing also about it is, if you are a grantee and say they're 3-year grants and you've submitted and haven't been accepted for funding, there is this one more shot. If you've, in the past, you could only have 2 shots at refunding, you could now on the next RFP go out in February. So to make things short, everyone who's out there, every grantee who is now a grantee, everyone who's thinking of applying for a loan, or everyone who has been rejected, the key date now is in February or March of 19. And you want to do all the prep work. You want to get your proposal as solid as you can get it and be ready for when it comes. Because the one thing about these grants is, it's not possible to write them in a month. There's a lot of prep that we're going to be going through as we talk on these PLCs of what you need to do. That's basically what they indicate to us. It seems like the program is strong. It's just kind of reoriented for now. One of the things that happened at the all grantee meeting is David Lloyd, who was in charge of this program, was there, and Rachel Conant was there. She heads up the Brownfields job training program. And they talked a little bit about what else is going on a larger scale. Some of you may have heard about the Build Act. There's 2 Build Acts. There's a DOT Build Act that you may have read about, and that has to do with the Department of Transportation. And there's an EPA Build Act. And that act influences the grants. They're minor as far as job training goes. They do allow certain things. They allow larger groups to get together to submit proposals. Probably the most significant issue with the new Build Act is it allows Environmental Workforce Development job training grantees to have an indirect cost attached. In the past, for the last 20 or so years, you could not charge indirect costs. These are the cost of running the Xerox copier and facilities and administrative. So when you went in, you couldn't get those indirect costs funded. Under the Build Act, the new act that we'll be working under, you can. And there's two ways of doing that, indirect costs. They can either come out and audit your program, or you could just charge an extra 5%. So what it basically means to our grantees is they're going to get an extra 5% of the grant that they submit to cover indirect costs, which is a little bit of a positive. So David and Rachel talked about that and talked about what's happening in EPA at the all grantee meeting. They talked a little bit about the structure of EPA. They've changed also some of the acronyms. Just for background information, EPA is famous for acronyms. The old Office of Brownfields is now called OLEM, Office of Land and Emergency Management. So Office of Land and Emergency Management, this covers spills, and brownfields covers all sorts of other programs, underground storage tanks and other things. But under OLEM, there's another acronym called OBLR. OBLR is the Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization. And that covers the work that we do, the Environmental Job Training Program. It also covers an acronym you'll hear, ARC grants. ARC grants are grants that are assessment grants in communities to assess the amount of pollution within that community, revolving loan funds, which lends money to communities to plan and to work on revitalizing their brownfields, and then the actual cleanup grants. So we refer to them as ARC grants. And ARC grants are the, I call it the boots on the ground grants. They're the ones that are doing the hard cleanup work. The Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training grants are providing workers for the ARC grantees, and they're also training people in the communities to do the cleanup, how to get good jobs so they'll benefit from the work that the revitalization is doing. And that's kind of how they've divided it. And, of course, where HMTRI fits in is we assist the environmental workforce training job development grants to get the grants for communities to get the grants and to implement them successfully, to exchange ideas, to trade ideas, what works, what doesn't work, how to write the grant to give you your best leverage, how to organize your program. And we're basically here to help communities get these programs going. That's why we had the All Grantee Conference. We have this once a year, and in addition to these professional learning community calls, and these events, and we also have a best practices guide. In fact, any of you out there who would be interested in getting our latest guide, Heather, do you want to give them your email address?
Absolutely. You can reach me as at HK as in kitten, BALLOU at EICC.edu. Again, that's HKBALLOU at EICC.edu. And Mike is always very good about including my contact information in all of the notes from the PLC sessions as well.
And in fact, if you went to the meeting, or if you got a notice from me that the meeting is today, you're on our list. If you may, if someone told you about this PLC that you ought to attend it, why don't you just drop your contact information to Heather, and we'll make sure you're on the PLC list, which will give you access. We'll send out on Friday notes of this conversation, and it'll give you websites, and it'll give you places you may want to check out. And each every other week, each PLC session, we'll have different things, funding opportunities for your information, a little bit about what we talked about, and some supplemental information. In fact, in this week's notes, closed session notes, we're going to include all of the topics from the all grantee meeting with the talking points that we talked about underneath them. And the purpose of this is to give you an idea of what we did, what we talked about, and as you think about your program, it may spur your imagination and curiosity about some of these activities that are required to make one of these programs work. Last year, or last PLC, we went over critical issues. The way we do this is we break the over many years of working with all grantees, we've observed that there are 8 basic general activities that need to be completed well to make a sustainable program. And we, in the last PLC, and you can go to the notes on the toolbox.org, you'll see those critical issues. They include things like labor market assessments, community market assessments, building partnerships, leveraging for additional support, student recruitment, developing curriculums and training, life skills, remedial training, support services, student retention, placement and tracking, program sustainability. Those are 8 general categories that we identify. And under each of those categories, we have best practices. And if you're interested in the publication that we just finished, you can go to the toolbox, and it's there, or you can write or ask Heather to send you a hard copy of best practices. And those are the best practices that fit with these 8 critical issues. That's exactly what we talked about at the all grantee meeting. We did a mix of critical issues and best practices. So what different grantees are doing in different areas that they felt were critical to developing these programs. And these critical issues and best practices have really been developed over many years. In fact, at the meeting, we recognized Art Shanks. He's with Cypress Mandela in Oakland. He's been doing this for about 20 years. We celebrated this all grantee meeting as the 20th year that we've had it. So we've been observing and working with the grantees for many years, trying to categorize what are the critical issues, what are the best practices that grantees find successful in making their program work. Many of our grantees that come to a meeting, we've recognized them. Art has come to 18 of our all grantee meetings. Chris Litzau out of Milwaukee has come to 15 of them. People from Tacoma, Washington have come to 12 of them. And even our regional coordinators, many of them, you think of people coming in and out of jobs, but many of them have been to many of these meetings. Linda Morgan out of Chicago has been to 16 of these meetings. Jeff Barnett has been to 16 of these meetings. And we even had Myra Blakely, who helped get the program going and keep it sustained over the years. It's been to 14 of these meetings. In fact, she came, she's retired now, but she came to participate and give us some advice at this particular meeting. And other people from other agencies have found it helpful. Sharon Beard out of NIHS has been to 13 of our meetings, and she gives us ideas of what they're working on other agencies and some of the resources that are out there. In fact, in this week's post-session notes, I'm going to put something she sent us on financial literacy. And there's FDIC has developed tremendous training modules that you could deliver or work with someone to deliver on training. And they have computer-aided training as well as hard copy training. And in our post-session notes, we'll let you know on how to get a hold of those. Well, let's talk a little bit about what we discussed at the all grantee meeting and how it might pertain to some of your programs. of course, one of the big hits at the meeting is actually our networking. Most of the comments we discussed this morning that came in on the post-meeting survey was, gee, we wish we had more time to just network. And we did have lots of time to network, several hours out of the two-day schedule. And what people get out of that is just an introduction to other programs, what other people are doing. More importantly, getting to see them face-to-face so they could call them or email them if they have specific questions. And networking is good not only for those who went to the meeting, but anyone else. One thing we've observed over the years is all the grantees, the EPA workforce grantees, are really helpful and willing to help. If, as you go through these PLC calls and someone gives a talk about what they're doing, you could call them up. You could email them and ask them directly to explain what they did or how they did it or what strategy they used to, say, recruit people. You can talk to them one-to-one, and you don't have to worry about being maybe a stranger. Even if you didn't go to the all-grantee meeting and get to know them face-to-face, people are really interested in helping. They're not competitive. They're really helpful, and we try to stress this as a culture for the whole, all of the grantees. One of the things we had that people really liked were the student panels. These were people that had been through programs. Many of you who have trained students know exactly what I'm talking about. They've trained students, they've gone out in the world, they've had tremendous success, and we had several of them talk about their experiences, what happened before they entered the program, what happened as they went through it, and then when they graduated. We had one participant who went through the program, got a great job, ended up as an employer. He actually ended up hiring students from the program. And there was a turn of events. The company he was working for was sold, and he left that company and was now looking for another position. But I think what came out of that was interesting is that these participants said that we're family. Once we go through this program, we're in it and we communicate for a long time. And we'll talk about that at another session about the importance of social networking and keeping in touch. This gentleman was looking back at the graduates that preceded him, that followed him, and looking for a job in a new company. He's got a positive attitude and feels he'll do well. But more important than that, his grantee, the grantee that graduated him, is going to work with him and find him a position that may be better than ever because of his experience he's had. So one of the big issues that came out of this is that these grantees are actual, it's a culture, and they help each other, they help the graduates, and they help, once they graduate, they not only help them get the jobs to begin with, but they follow them and they track them. So one of the really good panels we had was the graduate panels. I think another one that was very interesting was, we call it the drug panel, the drug issues. 5 years ago, we really didn't even have to talk about drugs. It came in passing. And as marijuana became, medical marijuana came in, and then we had it legal in some areas, it started to creep in. And each year, it's gotten more and more an issue as far as our training programs, to the point where we spend a lot of time on this. But the interesting thing about drug testing, recruitment and placement, it infiltrates every one of those things. And the diversity and the variance between the most strict grantees and the least strict grantees is vast. We actually have grantees who really allow everyone in. They don't really test, or if they do test, they allow people that are using drugs into the program, Overall, Pathstone, Fortune Society, because they're grantees that are very socially aware. They actually do rehabilitation. They work with people that have issues and they help them get past those issues. That's one extreme. They work with them. They will not graduate them unless they're clean. There are cases where they may find an employer who's willing to work with them, but they will not give them their approval that they came out of this program. Many of them will hold all of their certificates until they're clean. Once they're clean, then they'll award the certificates. In other words, they're going through different training programs. They're taking HAZWOP, or they might be taking confined space, letter, asbestos. They'll complete the program, but they won't award the certificate. And it gives them an impetus to make sure that they can pass a drug test. Now, even when we talk about drug tests, the range is huge. Are we talking about marijuana? Are we talking about harder drugs? There are drug panels of 12 drugs. There's panels as many as 15 drugs that they test for. Everyone seemed to have a little different story. Most of them, in fact, all of them, would not guarantee the quality of a student unless they were clean. That was probably the one thing in common. Other than that, some did random tests throughout the program. Some said they were going to do tests and didn't. Some said they were going to test them every 3 months and they may or may not have. Some, they wouldn't let them into the program if they weren't clean in terms of their drug tests. Many of them on their orientation nights, they would say, we're going to test, we're going to pre-test, don't even bother coming to the next session unless you're clean. And it's a waste of your time, it's a waste of our time. So we had those types of organizations. So it was all over the map. And I think through the discussion, we came to the conclusion you almost have to work backwards in your program. What kind of community are you in, and what kind of services are you prepared to offer? Do you have rehabilitation access to counselors and people who can help people? If you don't, then you can't go there. The other question is, what kind of employers do you have? We had a grantee that worked primarily with federal government and defense work. It was a no-no. There's no sense in even allowing them into the program. You didn't have to worry about drug testing in the program if they weren't clean. They just couldn't get into the program because they wouldn't be able to place them. So this was a huge issue as far as that went. And again, out of five panelists, everyone did something a little different. The only thing they had in common was they could not graduate someone and guarantee to their employer that someone was drug-free if they weren't. And of course, the extent to which they tested, like I said, varied. And a lot of that depended on what type of local services they had. Some used HHS, some used the WIB, the Workforce Investment Boards, provided drug testing. Some, their own organization, they joined a bigger organization, and they did it fairly routinely. Others just used grant money, and they were able to use the EPA grant money. So that also was all over the map, and it's one of those issues that we'll talk about that you really have to consider before you even start your program, because it's so pervasive and such a big issue. But we had, in addition to that, a lot of very interesting programs, how to screen pretty much everything that we're going to be going through on these PLCs. They address in two concentrated days how you might go about recruiting your students. How do you screen them? Do you do tryouts? We'll be talking about all of these things. What are tryouts? How do you send someone through a life skills program and then choose those who are most likely to succeed to go through? Most of these programs, you have about 20 students in a cohort. So what happens when you have 300 people? You've got to bring it down to 20. So we talk about all those things. And, of course, we talked about training techniques. We talked about working with employers. We talked about working with your advisory committee. And these are all things we're going to be talking about in the next 8 or 9 sessions. So We're going to try to deliver the same material that we did in the grantee meeting on these 30-minute calls. So that's what we wanted to do today, is just giving those of you who weren't able to go, and you heard probably a lot about the all-grantee meeting, what we talked about. It would have been great if everyone could come. We had about 120 people. But as a fallback, we're going to cover those topics anyway, and we'll get some of the people who presented at the all-grantee meeting to give us their session and to talk about what they talked about. So there's many things that you will see over the coming weeks that we covered there. Does anyone have any questions? We try to keep these calls to around 30 minutes, so our next one will be at the end of the month, and we'll be sending out post-session notes. Those notes will have all the topic areas that we covered in the all-grantee meeting. And again, the purpose of that is to get you thinking about some of the areas you want to discuss in more detail. If any of you have particular issues or areas you want to talk about at these PLCs or questions, just send them to Heather, and we'll make sure we get them on the agenda for our meetings. Are there anyone have any questions about this quick synopsis of the all-grantee meeting? Okay. Well, we'll be again talking again in a couple of weeks, and between now and then, have a good week or so. Thanks for attending today. See you soon.